It's a tremendous privilege this morning to be able to introduce the yeshiva, the guests who are here, to be able to hear a bit of Torah from Rav Herschel Schechter. Cohen pointed out very accurately that the shorter I introduce, the more time you get with Rav Schechter, which I think is a very worthy investment. You're privileged, thank God, to learn with Rebbeim, who love you, and Talmidei Chachamim, but there are Talmidei Chachamim, there are Talmidei Chachamim. Having had the privilege for a little while to learn from Rav Schechter, both in the Kollel and in Smicha, as well as to be able to, very, very open to phone calls all the years that I was in Oakland. There are things that come up, and you need to know who to call and who has a grasp of everything. To be able to put it together, as well as the sensitivity to deal with the cases, I consider it to be a very deep privilege over the years to have been able to call Rav Schechter and to hear as he processed very all sorts of situations with the command of all the sources. And today you get an opportunity to learn a bit as well from the Rosh Yeshiva. Thank you, Rav Schechter.
Thank you very much. I was asked to talk a little bit about the Briska Derech HaLimud and Rabbi Soloveitchik's style in his shir. So I will attempt to discuss it. The Gemara usually does not tell you what the abstract din is. The Gemara usually gives you a case, and they tell you the din in this case is whatever. So then you have to take the case and remove all of the details that are irrelevant. The story happened in Be'er Sheva. So the din is different in Be'er Sheva and in New York. Sometimes it is different. So you have to know, this story happened to a woman. Would the din be the same if it would happen to a man? We're talking about real estate deal. The same din, a man or a woman. You have to remove all the aspects of the case that are irrelevant. You have to figure out which is the key aspect of the case that causes that the din should be like this. In the Shulchan Aruch also you have like that. You have, let's say, a siman that has 20 se'ifim. So the Vilna Gaon and the Bir Hagra will often write on Sif Hey, he'll write Kanal Sif Aleph. This is a repeat of the principle, as Kanal means Kaniska Liel, as mentioned above in Sif Aleph. He'll point out that Sif Hey and Sif Yud and Sif Yutes are all a repeat of Sif Aleph. It's the same rule, just it's dressed up in a different case. So that you have to know, how you have to be able to figure out how to abstract the din from the case, which aspects of the case are irrelevant and which aspects are relevant. There are other people who don't learn like that, and they think whenever the Gemara has a din, the din only applies if you have all the 14 and a half conditions that are mentioned in the Gemara in this case. So they can have the mimidam and milsa the milsa. You can never apply any din in the Gemara to a different case unless you have all the 14 and a half conditions that you have there. So that's utterly ridiculous. You have to figure out which aspects of the case are relevant to the din and which are not relevant. A lot of times the Gemara will give you the historical background of the development of the halacha. So I'll give Rabbi Soloveitchik's mashal. The Gemara has a lot of kulas when it comes to an aguna. If a woman is married and the husband is missing, you don't know if he's alive or dead. So the Gemara says, Mishum iguna kila berabban. Sometimes the rabbis were mekel. So this doesn't explain why they were mekel. This explains why there was a big shas hadchak and they had to do something. So they had to come up with a rule, but they had to discover a principle, a guiding principle. Yep. So Leitchi gave the following mashal. Someone from the Jewish Theological Seminary once published a book. One of the big professors in the Theological Seminary published a book. He said the reason why the rabbis came up with a din when you construct a sukkah of lovewood, if you have a gap of less than 3 tvachim, and you have a principle of good asik mechitz, the mechitzas are only, the walls of the sukkah are only 10 tvachim tall. 10 tvachim tall is below my waist, and the schach is all the way up on top, and the tvanas are supposed to be touching the schach. So the rabbi said, good asik mechitz, that we visualize it as if good means meshoch, as if you stretch up the mechitz, as if it reaches to the schach. And then the mechitz, the tvanas, the mechitzas don't have to reach all the way down to the ground. If it's within 3 tochim to the ground, then we say good aches mechitzta. We stretch the mechitzta, we visualize as if they reach the ground. So this professor from the seminary wrote, the reason why the rabbi said this is because there was a scarcity of wood in the days of the Tanoim. And there wasn't enough wood, so they came up with these din. So some people said, Apikiris. The fellows from the seminary said, Apikiris. How can he say such a thing? The din is the din. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, he doesn't think that the person is an Apikiris. He said that, but that doesn't explain the din. So he gave a moshel l'madala d'ayma. During the Second World War, so the American government realized that the Nazis had big experts in physics who were working on atomic energy. And if they're going to develop atomic energy, they're going to make an atomic bomb. They're going to win the war, and they'll control the whole world. So they paid money for Einstein and the other geniuses to work quickly on atomic energy, and then they developed the atom bomb. So if you want to know, how does the atom bomb work? It's simple. There was the Second World War, and the Nazis were about to discover the secret to atomic energy, so America spent a lot of money, so they made an atom bomb. That's the historical background, but you have to have a formula. You have to have a formula in physics to explain why it works. You give the historical background, doesn't explain why it works. They used to say, probably above a mice, about Newton. How did Newton come upon the idea of gravity? He didn't get along with his mother-in-law. That's the story that we heard. He didn't get along with his mother-in-law, and he ran out of the house, and he laid down under a tree, and the apple fell on his head. And he declared, Hakir, how come the apple falls down? Why doesn't it fall up? So he developed the whole idea of gravity. And maybe it's true, maybe it's not true, whatever. But that doesn't explain the principle of gravity. That's the historical background. If it's true, that's the background of the discovery. So the same thing, the Gemara tells you, Mishum Iguna, Akila Be Rabbana, Mishum Iguna, they realized they have a problem over their hands. The Romans were putting a lot of Jewish men in dungeons, and we didn't know if they're alive or dead. So the wives are going to be agunas for the rest of their lives. So the rabbis came up with a kula. If there's Eid Echad, we'll be happy if there'll be an Eid Echad. Mikir Adin, you should really need two witnesses to say that the husband is not alive, because a davar she'bi'erva needs two witnesses. Dini mamonis need two witnesses at a pasuk. Al pi shnei edim al shlosh edim yakum davar. Dini nefashis needs two witnesses. Al pi shnei edim al shlosh edim yumas ameis. And davar she'bi'erva is a gezeira shava. Davar imamon, it says, ki motzu ba'erbas davar. He discovers that his wife was mezaneh. The wife had an affair, so the husband has to divorce his wife. He's not allowed to continue living with her. So we need two kosher edim. So Mishum Eguna, the rabbi saw that so many men were sitting in prisons, and there was nobody there. So if there'll be an Eid Echad, they would be happy. It was a big debate whether should you rely on Eidus Eid Echad or not. And Rabbi Akiva was in prison. The Romans put him in prison till they tortured him to death. So the Tanoim say, I heard from the man in prison. They used to have Tanaim who walked by the window to the prison and talk and learning in Psak Halach with Rabbi Akiva before they had a chance to kill him. He was Paskin and Shalas from the prison. So the Tana said, I heard from the man in prison, from Rabbi Akiva, that the minig was that you do Masina Seisha Pi Eidech, you can rely on Eidech. So that's the historical background. That's why they wanted to have, that's why they had to discuss the issue. Maybe can we rely on Eidech? But that doesn't explain what the formula is. The Gemara tells you what the formula is. That's Isha Daiko Mitzvah. It's a ruba d'leisa kamon. Not that echad is believed. It's a ruba d'leisa kamon. The woman would not want to remarry unless she knows for sure that the husband is dead. So she probably researched it very well, and we rely on that ruba d'leisa kamon. Or the Gemara says maybe it's a milsa davida legluila mishakri inshi. Maybe the echad will be afraid to tell a lie. He may get caught red-handed in the lie. The husband's going to come back alive, so the guy's going to be dead embarrassed. That logic perhaps doesn't apply, Bisman Hazeh, as Soloveitchik said. He remembers when they asked Khrushchev, does he have any missiles in Cuba? This is before you people were born. Khrushchev was the prime minister of Russia. So they asked him, does he have any missiles in Cuba? So he says, no. And then they showed, I think, Nixon. He showed photographs of all the missiles. He wasn't embarrassed. The modern statesmen tell lies. That they tell lies all the time. They're not embarrassed when they tell a lie. They get caught red-handed in the line, they just go weiter. It doesn't bother them. Rabbi Soloveitchik said he doesn't think that umden applies bizman. People would be embarrassed to tell a lie because they're caught red-handed. He doesn't think. In Shulchan Aruch, they have certain umdenes, certain psychological umdenes that existed in the days of the Gemara, don't necessarily still apply bizman. Psychology changes in different generations. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, you can't, whenever the Gemara gives a historical background for a certain development of halacha, that doesn't explain the halacha. You have to figure out what's the formula. History is the history. When I went to college, so I was not a science major. So I took a course for the non-science major. I took chemistry for the non-science major. So they spent a lot of time giving the history of chemistry. Soloveitchik said that in Europe, when he went to university in Berlin, that was a popular thing. They gave the history of the scientific discoveries. But it doesn't, it's fascinating. It's Chicago information. It's like, believe it or not. But it doesn't explain the formula of the issue. In physics, you have to have a formula. So in halacha also, it doesn't help. It doesn't help that they say that there was a scarcity of wood in the days of the Tanaim, therefore there had to be mekel. That's true, there had to be mekel. But then what were the kulas? So there is a din of lavan in Hilchas Shabbos. There is a din of gerasa kulinachis in Hilchas Shabbos. And maybe they just borrowed. Maybe that professor from the seminary is right. That what motivated them to sit and try to come up with a leniency is because there was a scarcity of wood. But they had to come up with a formula. So what was the formula? So maybe they just realized at that time the dinim that apply in Hilchas Shabbos to mechitzas, in Shabbos we call it a mechitza, in Sukkah we call it a defanis. The dinim are slightly different, but a lot of the dinim are the same. So maybe the professor is right. Maybe for many years they never had these dinim in Hilchas Sukkah. Maybe they only decided because it was a big Shas Adchak. Maybe no. Maybe that was the historical background. But what's the formula over here? The formula is we took the dinim in Hilchas Shabbos that were originally formulated with respect to Mechitza, Halachas L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, and we applied them to the Tfanus of the Sukkah as well. Soloveitchik used to have a style of presenting the shiur. He's studying Gemara already for a while, so the Gemara is full of machlokes. Almost every page in the Gemara is machlokes. The Avodram points out that the one perik in Mishnayos that doesn't have any machlokes mentioned in it is Ezer Mekayman, a nice, clean perik. Ezer Mekayman that we have in the city before Baruch Shem. It's the one and only perik that doesn't have any machlokes mentioned. So, whenever you have a machlokes, Rabbi Soloveitchik would always say, before you analyze what they're arguing about, they probably agree on 95% of all the story over here. So let's first discuss what's the 95%, what they agree upon, and then we'll be able to understand better what they disagree about. So he would always give background, and he would present the background in such a way that after he gave the 95% background of what they agree on, everybody would be able to say, now we understand. The argument is, how do you apply the rule over here? You always have to know the background, what they agree upon. And a lot of yeshivas, when there's a machlokes, they'll just discuss what the machlokes is. They won't discuss the background. That's a big mistake. You should always discuss what they agree upon. And in context, you'll understand better what they disagree about. There is a klal that the Ramban writes about in the beginning of the third perek in Chulin. The third perek in Chulin is Eile Treifas. So it talks about Treifas, a lot about biology. I don't know too much about biology, so I don't appreciate that perek. But doctors, pre-med, so they enjoy learning perek Eile Treifas. So the Gemara has on the first page in perek Eile Treifas, the Gemara has a machlokes hatanoim. When the Torah prohibited us from eating these diseased animals that have a trefa, has a hole in the lung, a hole in the kishkes, a hole in the stomach, wherever, all the different broken leg, it depends where it's broken, what part of the leg. It's broken high or broken low, it's not a trefa, broken in a certain location, it is a trefa. So why are these animals forbidden to be eaten? Is it because trefa ein achaya? Is it because we assume the animal most certainly will die within 12 months? So it's already half dead. So shechita, you can't. Let's say an animal dies, then you shecht it. After it's dead, it doesn't help that you shecht it. So it's an avela already. You have to shecht the animal while it's 100% alive. So if the animal is a trefa and trefa ain't a chaya, but your dua, it's going to die within 12 months. So it's like shechting an animal that's half dead, and that's why it's aser. Or should we say no? Even if the animal will live another 100 years, ad mei yesem shana, let it live 120 years. The animal is diseased, so the Torah says it's also b'chid. The treifa chaya, but the Torah has nothing to do with the fact that it's going to die within 12 months. So that's a machlokes satanoim, and with ramifications la'alacha. Let's say you have an animal that has a disease that seems to indicate that it's a treifa. Then you lock it up, and it survives for 12 months. So according to the one opinion, it'll be mutter because it didn't have one leg out. It lived for 12 months. So it's by definition, it's not a treifa. So that's a machlokes in the Gemara. So the Ramban asks, in the Chidush HaRamban, the beginning of Perek Eile Treifas, Timihani, Hech Nechluku Avos HaOlam. How can the Tanoim have a machlokes on something? Why didn't they experiment? to find out whether why don't they take 100 animals with treifas, lock them up and feed them, and see if they survive 12 months or not. He says it doesn't make sense to have a machloikis and mitzias. Doesn't make sense. The rabbi should have experimented to find out. And he quotes the passage from the Talmud Yerushalmi. There is a machloikis hatanoim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nui and the Chachamim regarding rice. If you make rice flour and you mix it with water, does that turn into chametz or not? We assume no. Many Ashkenazim don't eat rice. Some of the Sephardim also don't eat rice. So that's only a minig. Kitnius is only a minig on Pesach. Ni'ikar Adin, it's not a problem. But there's a Tana Rabbi Yochanan ben Nui, he holds that rice is bole de chimutz. If you mix rice with water, it's bole de chimutz. So the Gemara says we absolutely do not paschal like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nui. The Gemara says we don't paschal. So that's why the Baal HaMor makes fun of this minig that you don't eat rice on Pesach. The Gemara says we absolutely don't paschal like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nui. So what's the minig all about? So the minig is based on something else. So the Talmud, so this machlekes, where the rice is bole de chimutz or not, is relevant if you cook rice with water on Pesach, either you have to be concerned it became chametz. And it's also a difference if you make rice bread, is it going to be hamoitzi? You have to recite birchas hamazon. And can you make matzahs from rice? Because the din of lechem depends on matzah in chumash, it's called lechemoni. And it says you should eat matzahs on Pesach, and you shouldn't eat chametz. So the Gemara understands, the Tanaim understood, it's only considered a matzah, lechem, if it would have been boiled de chametz. You hurried and you baked it quickly. But if you would have let it sit longer, mixed with the water, the flour with the water, would have turned into chametz. So only such a dough that could be theoretically boiled de chametz is considered, lechem is considered matzah. If it's something that's not boiled de chametz, then it's not acceptable for lechem. So this is relevant for Hamotzi lechem and rats, that's a din de rabbana. Relevant for chi of chala, vay bacholchem lechem ha'aretz. You only chayv and afrash is chala, if it could be called lechem. Cake and cookies are also chayv and afrash is chala. That's also called lechem. That's a subcategory of lechem. We call that pas habo bekisnet. But it's pas. It is pas. If you eat wheatina, farina, you eat Wheaties, you can eat 20 boxes of Wheaties. It doesn't become hamotzi. It's not lechem. You can eat all the wheatina you want, all the farina you want. It's not going to become hamotzi. But if you eat enough cake or cookies, if you kaveh sudan, then we call it lechem. Then you have to recite birchas hamazon. So the dinim derais and dinim derabbanan that depend on lechem. Hafrashas chala depends on lechem. Hayibachochem lechem oetz. Matzah depends on lechem. Birchas hamazon. Eretz Yisraelim miskenes tachal balechem yechalta v'suvata v'irachtu es Hashem alakecha because hamazon depends on lechem. Then there are dinim derabbanan that depend on lechem. The tilus yadayim beforehand and hamotzi versus bar minim mezainus. And other dinim erev echatzeres is only lechem shemavachem olav hamotzi. So the Gemara says it's only called lechem if it's bolei dechimutz. So there's a machlekes abichem menur in the rabbanan where the rice is bolei dechimutz. So Yerushalmi asks, the Ramban quotes this Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi asks in Chala, how can you have a machleke satanayim on a dover shal metzis? Why didn't they experiment? Why didn't they mix the rice with the water and watch it to see, is it bole de chimetz or is it bole de sirchon? It doesn't make sense to have a machleke satanayim on something that you can experiment on. Rabbi Soloveitchik commented on that. He said, the Greeks didn't believe in experimentation. They would always philosophize. They felt that experimentation is manual labor, that's only for slaves. And free men have to philosophize. How come fire goes up and water goes down, and how come water puts out fire? Why doesn't fire put out the water? They would philosophize about everything. That's why their science is nishgetaik. That's why they were not successful in science, because they kept on philosophizing. You're not supposed to philosophize. You have to figure out the data and figure out how physics and chemistry, how it works. So the rabbis never went for that baloney. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to quote the expression that the Gemara has, David HaMelech would pride himself. The other kings sit on their thrones and they're very dainty and clean. They're wearing royal malbushim. And David HaMelech says, Yadai molochlochas bedam shvir v'shulya. The women come with shilas. Is she a nida or not? Whether the baby had a tzuras ablad. So he would hold in his hands the dam anida. He would hold the beged to see whether it's dam anida. He would hold the vlad. The woman had a hapola. She had a miscarriage. So if it has a tzuras ablad, then it's matami. She has tumas leida. So David HaMelech would experiment. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to use that expression. Yodam alochlochas, the dam shvir v'shulya, to bring out this notion that the rabbis always believed in experimentation, not like the Greeks. So that's what the Yerushalmi asks. How can you have a machlekes hatanaim and a dovish al metzias? Why didn't they experiment to find out what is bolei dechem, it's bolei desichon? The Yerushalmi answers they did experiment, and it produced a certain reaction. And Rabbi Chaim Ben-Uri said, see, there you have it, that's chimutz. And the Chacham said, no, we don't consider that chimutz, we consider that sirchon. They argued, where do you draw the line between chimutz and sirchon? But the Ramban says, it doesn't make sense. How can they have a machlekes with a trefa chay, trefa ein achaya? Why don't they take 100 animals, lock them up, and feed them for a year, and see if they'll all survive, if any of them will survive? So he answers, they probably did experiment. They probably did take 500 animals, and fed them for a year, and they probably all died. So half of the Tanaim said, there you have it, it's conclusive proof. All the animals that were trefa died. And the other Tanaim said, but it wasn't a controlled experiment. Maybe if you have 5,000 animals, maybe some of them would survive. You didn't prove conclusively every single animal that has a trefus is vada going to die within a year. Maybe some of them would not have died. You didn't have enough animals. Go make an experiment. 5,000 animals. So they didn't want to do that. So that's what the Ramban has in a few places. Tosis writes in Shabbos, the end of Masechet Shabbos, Tosis has a suggestion. There's a machlekes hatanaim about sweeping the floor with a broom. If you have a dirt floor, is it a psikreshei that you're going to be mashvagumas? If you're mashvagumas, if you have cracks in the dirt floor, and you sweep and you mashvagumas, you make it straight, that's a malacha bona. So Tosis has a suggestion that it's a machlekes hatanaim, whether it's a psikreshei or not. So the Ramban writes on the Muhammad, that's ridiculous. A machlekes, whether something is a psikreshei, experiment 100 times and you'll find out whether it's a psikreshei. A psikreshei means about dois. It's vada, A is certainly going to lead to B. If it's not a vada, it's not called a psikreshei, even if it's 98% of the time. That's kar of the psikreshei. Maybe it's awesome with the Rabban, but it's not called the psikreshei. The Rabban has this recurrent thing. So this is, in most of the yeshivas, they assume they have adopted this position, but Rabbi Soloveitchik also, in Brisk, they assume it doesn't make sense to have a machlokes in mitzias. So a lot of times the Gemara sounds as if they're having machlokes in mitzias. If you can, it's best to interpret that they're not arguing with mitzias, they're arguing about some idea. Not a machlokes in mitzias. I remember when we were studying Gemara Gittin, so a get is a shtar. So the first day Rabbi Soloveitchik said, who can give me a definition of a shtar? So we were looking at him, a definition of a shtar? A shtar is a shtar. What do you have to give a definition? He said, no, you have to know what's it. He says, when you go to university, you have to first define your terms before you discuss the topic. What's the definition of a shtar? So first he gave us a machlekes in Shulchan Aruch, what's the definition of a shtar rai? There are two kinds of shtar, shtar rai and a shtar kinyan. So first he gave a definition of a shtar raya, that's a machlekes, the ge'oinim. He showed us a shachlechesh machlekes ha-ge'oinim, what's the definition of a shtar, and he showed us where the sources are in the Gemara for this machlekes, and then he showed there's a machlekes ha-tanoim. What are you studying this year? Which Gemara are you studying? Kiddushin. So you'll study it in Kiddushin. They've come across it already. So first he gave the definition. What's the definition of a shtar raya? And then he showed there's a machlokes satanayim. What's the definition of a shtar kinyan? He gave all the differences. He would always collect, by way of background, he would always give you a background. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't have a bikias in the sense he didn't remember whether it was Ahmed Aleph or Ahmed Beis. He wouldn't remember what daf. In the middle of the shiur, I remember many times, he used to give the shiur in Yiddish, until there was one student who didn't know Yiddish, so the next day the shiur was in English. He couldn't visualize that there's a student that doesn't know Yiddish. So there was one student who always davened in the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. He wasn't a Sephardi, but he davened in the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. So the next day, Rabbi Soloveitchik started shiur in English. He wanted the students to understand the shiur. So he... So a lot of times he would say, it's a Gemara Baba Basra. He would turn to Rabban Lichtenstein to his right and say, Velcha daf Aaron. He'd say, what daf is it? Aaron would scream, daf Chav Gimel Man Beis, or daf Kuf Amar Aleph. You know what we say? Or it's a Taisvis over there. He didn't remember. So he would say, what daf and what Amon and what the Dibra Mascha was. But he didn't remember. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't remember. But he had a Bikias in the Inyonim. Whenever he would want to explain a Gemara, he would always, the building blocks of Halacha have to be concepts that appear in the Gemara. The Gemara in the first Gemara in the Dorim distinguishes between Neder and Shvuah. The Neder is an Issa Chepsa and Shvuah is an Issa Gavra. So the Gemara uses this as a building block, and the Gemara has six or seven differences between Neder and Shvuah based on that premise that Neder is an Issa Chepsa, Shvuah is an Issa Gavra. So that's why Rab Chaim and his Sefer sometimes will show this is an Issa Chepsa, this is an Issa Gavra. They say that from one of the great Rabbanim in Europe, one of the big Talmid Chachamim in the recent years, Rav Ruvel Adenaburger, that he said, if you want to say a svara, it has to be either the svara is found explicitly in the Gemara or kamat explicitly in the Gemara. You can't say new svaras that don't appear in the Gemara. They printed that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik told his children that they shouldn't begin to say a svara and learning until they finished all of Shas with Rashi. Because every discipline has its own self-contained logic. In physics, you can't use rules of Migu or Kam Lebedirabmine. You have to use principles of physics. In chemistry, in mathematics, you can't use sine and cosine if you're talking about chemistry. That's a mathematics. Every discipline has its own system, has its own self-contained style of logic. So halacha is also a self-contained system, has its own terminal, has its own building blocks, has its own style of logic. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik told his children they shouldn't dare to say a svara in learning, to answer Akasha something before they've covered all of Shas with Rashi, so they'll know what's considered Talmudic logic, what's considered acceptable Talmudic logic, what's not. Common sense often plays a role, but not always. Common sense doesn't always win the day in physics or in chemistry. If you have two chemicals that are peaceful, and you mix them together, they can make an explosion. So the layman can ask Akasha, why should it make an explosion? This chemical is peaceful, that chemical is peaceful. This chemical is green, that chemical is black. When you mix it together, it turns orange. How can it become orange if this is green and this is black? Akasha famaisa, but that's what it is. So you can't ask kashas. That's a logical kasha. You can't ask kashas in logic. Chemistry has its own logic, and physics has its own. So halach also has its own logic. Svara, a lot of times, does play a role. Common sense svara does play a role. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was known. Many of his psukim were based on plain old simple common sense. He was very strong at common sense. But common sense doesn't always win the day. And halacha, sometimes you have a pasuk that says we don't follow common sense. So that's Rav Chaim was known to have told his children they shouldn't say a svara until they finished all of Shas with Rashi. I remember once a student, Rabbi Soloveitchik, always called upon the students they should read the Gemara, and then he would correct them when they mispronounced the words, he would correct their grammar, he would have them read the Rashi and the Tosfos. He wanted to train the students reading, he would correct them. So I remember a student was reading the Tosfos. Tosfos always says, Akasha, there's another Gemara that says Fakir. There's always another Gemara that says Fakir. There's always another Gemara. They say they tell a story, it's probably a true story. Then Rabbi Soloveitchik visited Eretz Yisrael once in 1935. He was a candidate for the rabbinate in Tel Aviv, and he lost because at that time he belonged to Aguda, and they were only giving jobs to people from the Mizrahi. So he lost to Rabbi Amiel, who was a Mizrahi leader in Europe before he came to Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was visiting in Eretz Yisrael in 1935, so they invited him to give shiurim in different places. They gave him Merkaz Harav. They gave him different yeshivas. There weren't so many yeshivas then. He gave in all the various yeshivas. So they say in one of the yeshivas, he started to say in Yiddish. The shiur was in Yiddish. The Gemara says, and somebody screams out, there is a Gemara that says Fakir. He didn't even say what. It's true. There's always a Gemara that says Fakir. Siddha Gemara Fakir. There's always a Gemara Fakir. That's what Taisus and all the Rishon work on. The Gemara seems to have a contradiction between one Gemara and the other. So often, the Chachmi Svarad will say, it's a Machlaikas. That Gemara disagrees with this Gemara. Usually Tosfos will not like to say. Usually Tosfos will avoid saying it's a machlokes. Tosfos will more often try to blend everything together to show one is the rule and one is the exception to the rule. Sometimes you apply the rule, so you have to figure out which Gemara is the rule and which is the exception to the rule and why is it an exception to the rule. And sometimes that's going to be a dispute among the Rishonim. Which Gemara is the rule and which is the exception to the rule? That's going to be a different rule. If this is the rule, it's going to be one way. If that's the rule, then this exception is going to be different. So I remember the student was reading a Tosfos. Tosfos quotes from a Gemara. So he asked the student, did you look up the Gemara? He says, no. He says, you took Tosfos' word for it. Maybe the Gemara doesn't exist. He trusts Tosfos. So he said, you go to university. That's the first thing you're supposed to learn in university. You don't take anybody's word for anything. You always have to check everything up. Maybe there's a different girsa. Maybe there's a different girsa in the Gemara. A lot of times there is a different girsa. A lot of times in Tosfos, Tosfos quotes from the Gemara, and it says, Erev and Daf Yud Gimel Visham. What does it mean, Visham? In parentheses, Visham means that there's a Tosfos and that Daf that talks about the same topic that they're discussing here. Whatever it says, the Daf, and it says Visham, it's important to look up the Tosfos over there. See, what do they say? That's what Rabbi Soloveitchik always did in the Shir. Whenever the Rishonim, whenever Tosfos or the other commentaries on the Gemara, whenever the Rishonim point out a contradiction between two Gemaras, he would always insist that the student should prepare the both Gemaras and see, first of all, what the Girsa is. Does the Gemara really exist? And then even if it does exist, maybe Rashi has a different shot. Maybe the other Rishonim have a different shot. Maybe if this does have the Girsa, maybe the different interpretation so the whole Kashan doesn't get off the ground. And maybe the other Rishonim give a different answer. He would always be upset when the students wouldn't look up the other Gemara. He used to say the name of Rab Chaim Valozhiner, that he was going around the Beis Medrash. Chaim Valozhiner was a student of the Vilna Gaon. He was the one who founded the Valozhiner Yeshiva in 1802. And the yeshiva lasted for 90 years. He didn't last 90 years, but the yeshiva lasted for 90 years. After he died, his sons-in-law took over, and his grandchildren. So when the yeshiva was closed by the Russian government in 1892, 90 years later. So they say, Rabbi Chaim Valozhiner, once he escorted the students, did he check the Tosfos? The Tosfos quotes the Gemara from someone. Did he look up the Gemara? He says, no, he took Tosfos' word for it. So he says, you're not supposed to take Tosfos' word for it. So he said, there are two Gemaras that contradict each other. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, in the first Perek, when we die, we go to the Yom Adin in heaven, they judge us. So the Gemara said, the first question they ask, first thing they ask is, whether you learn Torah or not. So there's a Gemara, Masech Shabbos, in Perek, Bamem Adlikin, where the Gemara tells you, what are the first six questions that they ask you on the Yom Adin? So the first question they ask is, Nasasim Nasata Be'emunah. Where they dealt honestly in business. And then later, the second question is, Kavayt Itim Lator. Second question is about learning. But the first question is whether you dealt honestly in business. So Tosfos and Ohr Rishonim work on the contradiction. Here it says in Sanhedrin, En Chilis Dina Shalad Malad Divrei Torah. And there it said the first question they ask is, Nasas V'Nasata B'Amunah. So all the Mefarshim talk about it. All the Mefarshim speak about this contradiction. So Rabbi Chaim Valozhiner has said, Derech Halotze, he said, no. When you come to the Olam Emes, they're going to ask you, did you check up to see whether Tosfos quotes Gemara? Does it really say it? So the guy's going to say, I took Tosfos' word for it. They're going to say, Nasatzam and Asata Be'emunah! In business also, you take the guy's word for it. You don't take anybody's word for anything. You make sure everything is in the contract. Don't take anybody's word for anything. You always have to check up to make sure that the other Gemara exists. Rabbi Soloveitchik always did that. He would always tell us in advance, next week is going to give a shiur on this topic, and make sure you look up that Gemara with the Ramban, with the Rambam, whatever. He wasn't interested in reading all of the Rishonim on the Gemara. You never get anywhere if you read all the Rishonim. He's just interested in Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, and the Rambam, because these are the three Rishonim, Rashi, Tosfos, and the Rambam, we have on all of Shas. The others we don't have, so we don't know how would they deal with the other Gemara that contradicts this Gemara. You always have to check all the Gemaras. Once in a while, there was a famous Ramban. Once in a while, there was a famous Rosh, or there's a famous Rana, something. Okay. Or if there's an opinion that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, okay. So we're going to look that up too. But he didn't. He wasn't interested in reading every Rashba and every Ran. He was just interested. By him, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, and the Rambam, that's called learning. And the rest is already extra. The Baal HaMo'or lived in Lunel. Lunel means French for the moon. So he was only 19 years old. He was writing Hasogas. He writes in his introduction, he's only 19 years old. He's writing Hasogas on the Rif. The Rif at that time was like the Mishnah Berurah today, like the Chazon Ish. The Rif was the big Pesach. Till the days of the Rif, you had the Gaonim, but the Gaonim had all kinds of wild ideas. The Rif put all the Gemaras together. The Rif was a normal Pesach. So the Rif was the major Pesach at that time. And the Baal HaMo'or writes in his introduction, it's a shtikel chutzpah on my part. I'm only 19 years old. I'm disagreeing with the Rif, the big Pesach. He says, what can I do? he says he thinks the Rith made a mistake here and there, so he wants to delve into it. So the Balamor has Hasogis. He calls it the Mor HaKotan, because he lived in Lunel. But then he says when he gets to Nezikin, and Nezikin is much more complicated, so to understand Nezikin, you need the sunlight. So he calls it the Mor HaGodol. Noshim and Nezikin is called the Mor HaGodol. In the beginning, everything else is called the Mor HaKotan, because you can learn with the light of the moon, but Noshim and Nezikin, you need the Mor HaGodol. So in the end of the Sefer HaMor, in the end of Chulin, by mistake, we don't have it printed at the end of Chulin, we have it printed in the Sefer Tmim Deim. There's a collection of all the tshuvas of the Ravid. There were three Ravids. So one, the famous Ravid who wrote Hasogas on the Rambam, learned Becharusa with the Balamor. He used to learn Becharusa. And he has humorous, he wrote Hasogas on the Balamor. So whenever he agrees, he says, he stole it from me. God of whom he eat, Ravid writes, he stole it from me. Whatever he didn't steal from him, he said, everything that he says is wrong, and anything that he says is right, he stole it from me. Funny style of writing. So this Ravid, the Ravid Bala Sogas, married the daughter of the Ravid. They both learned, the Balamor and the Ravid both learned by the Ravid Bal HaEshkol, the Rabbein Avram HaBezen. The Ravid was Rabbein Avram Ben David. His father's name was David. His father-in-law's name was Rabbein Avram Ben Yitzchok, I think. He was the Abbezin and Narbona, so they also call him the Ravid. Shach writes in Yerudea, sometimes there's a contradiction between what some Rishonim quote and the name of the Ravid. Other Rishonim said, you should know, there are two different Ravids. One is the Ravid Bal HaEshkol, and one is the Ravid Bal HaSol. Then there's a third Ravid who wrote a history book, the Sefer HaKabbalah. He's never quoted in Halach at all. So he's never involved in any Shalos in Halach. There's a Sefer Tmim Deim, which is a collection of tshuvas by the Ravid Bal HaSogas. So because he was close, he learned Becharusa with the Balamor, so they put in the end of the Tmim Deim, the printers put the whole Sefer HaTzova. Balamor, at the end of Chulin, he finished all his HaSogas on the Rif. So at the end of Chulin, he writes, he's going to sum up the gist of many of his HaSogas. He says, he has a shtick, a gimmick, just like the Yud Gimel Mina Shatar and the Dreshes Behem, how to derive Dinim from reading in between the lines of the Chumash, so too the Yud Gimel Mina Shatar and the Dreshes Behem, and how to study Gemara. A shtick. So he writes, one of the klolim that he writes is very, very important. Sometimes you have the exact same expression, it appears in the Gemara different places, but it means totally different things. And sometimes you have totally different terminology, and it's the exact same thing. And that's really the Ikar in learning. A person shouldn't make a mistake and think the Gemara has the exact same lashon here and there, so it must mean the same thing. That's Yodua, that Rab Chaim Soloveitchik used to make fun of those, the Poilusha. Poilusha style used to be whenever the same lashon appears in the Gemara, so they assume that it's the same. Rab Chaim used to make fun that when a couple gets married and you have a party in their honor, Sheva Brachas, so you only recite the Sheva Brachas at the end if you have a Panim Chadoshes. What is the Panim Chadoshes? They're different opinions, so we usually assume, like the Rambam, somebody who wasn't there at the wedding is a Panim Chadoshes. This expression, Panim Chadoshes, appears in the end of Tmura. The Gemara says, Hanisrafim Afra Mutter. Let's say you have Pigal Noisah Tom, it's a mitzvah to burn him. It's a Raptus Hanisah Baish, and you learn that from the Psukim. Not only Noisah, Pigal and Tommy as well, mitzvah to burn it. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, the end of Tmura, when you burn the Pigal Noisatame, the Esh is Amutabano. That's called Hanisrafim. Some Isuri Hano are called Nigborim. Basa Bechadu, but there's no mitzvah to burn. You throw it in the garbage and you dispose of it. If you burn it, fine. But Nisrafim means it's a mitzvah, Dafka, to burn it. So then the Din says, Hanisrafim, Aframuta, the Esh is Amutabano. So the Rishonim have an expression. Why? Why? Because Panim Chadosh is Bawalakam. So they say, Rab Chaim Soloveitchik said, oh, you want to say Sheva Brachas? Get some ashes. You have Panim Chadoshes. You can say the Sheva Brachas. Obviously, the term Panim Chadoshes by Sheva Brachas, the term Panim Chadoshes by Nisraf, means a totally different thing. So he said, he made fun, so too, by the Poilus Shetairus. They say the two Gemaras with the same expression appears, and they assume that there's a link. Not necessarily any connection. And a lot of times you have totally different expressions, but it's the exact same thing. So Rab Soloveitchik would always point that out. Just yesterday, I gave a shiur in the Tivar, yeah? So we were talking about all the Ishtarya. So the expression appears in the Gemara in two different places, and the Masoras HaShas gives you the cross-reference. totally unrelated and absolutely nothing to do with each other. And people break their heads to explain why it's connected. It's not connected. Just because the Gemara has the same expression, it doesn't mean that it's the same thing. And very often you have Gemaras are talking about totally different things with different expressions, but it's the exact same idea behind it. I remember when we were studying Sanhedrin. So the Chumash in Parshas Mishpatim mentions the word Elohim, Loshen Chol. When you talk about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's Kodesh, Elohim. When you talk about Avodah Zarah, you don't say Elohim, it's Avodah Zarah, it's a Chol. Or you talk about Dayanim Smuchim, Nikar Bal Bais Elohu Elohim, it's a Loshen Chol. So the word Elohim appears three times by Adin Torah. The Gemara establishes that you need a bezna of three smuchim. But the psukim happen to be talking about gzelus v'chavolus. What if you would have a case of hodos v'halvos? So that's a machlokes on the first daf in Sanhedrin, whether hodos v'halvos also requires shloshes smuchim in HaTorah, or what, chadna mikosh, maybe one dying can pass on the case. So what's the definition? Rabbi Soloveitchik always was strict. What's the definition of... What if it's a different case? Not hoidas v'alvas, not gzelus v'chavolus. How do you define what's the definition of gzelus v'chavolus? What's the definition of hoidas v'alvas? Rav Soloveitchik mentioned a me'iri in Bava Kamma, Dafayin Amud Beis, which is quoted by the Shita Mukubetzes. He was not a big fan of the me'iri. He didn't like when the students read the me'iri. The reason why they read the me'iri is because the me'iri is in Hebrew and the Gemara is in Aramaic. So the boys didn't know Aramaic, so they used to read the here. It's like there was no art scroll then, so it's like you're looking at an art scroll. So here, the Miri translates the Gemara to Hebrew. But then the Miri starts quoting all the different opinions. He doesn't explain how they read the Gemara. So Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't like it. He always screamed at the students, "Will you stop bothering me with your Miri? Stop looking in the Miri. Break your head, figure out the Gemara, and don't confuse me with all the different shitas." He wasn't interested. If you get stuck and you don't know how to figure out pshat, and the Miri gives you a pshat, okay. So we'll appreciate it, we'll read the Miri. But if you're not stuck, everything reads well, the Miri quotes a new opinion that doesn't make any sense. You're not mechuyav to break your head, to be mi'ashav eshver a Miri. But once in a while, there's a famous Miri. So on Bava Kamma, that final base, there's a famous Miri. He interprets in the Gemara the following. Let's say there's a din of Kamble b'dirab minei. You may or may not be familiar. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says in Bava Kamma, I burned down my next door neighbor's barn on Shabbos. So I'm a chalal Shabbos, because I burned down his barn. That's Havara, I made a fire. But I'm an Odom HaMazik. So if you burn down the barn on a weekday, you're chayv mitam Odom HaMazik. If it burns down the barn on Shabbos, Hasarif Kedisha Shal Chaver B'Shabbos is potter, because since you have a chiyav misa for chilu Shabbos and a chiyav mamon for Odom HaMazik, that's chal. Simultaneously, with chad maise, one act of burning down the barn, so that's komble b'derabin. He only gets the death penalty, and he doesn't have to pay the money. And even if there were no edim hasra, he still say komble b'derabin. So the Me'iri has this, he quotes in the name of early Rishonim, what if a fellow smoking a cigar on Shabbos and he borrows $1 million from me? So because he's puffing on the cigar, he's mechal Shabbos, he doesn't have to pay back the money. So the Miri says no, that this din of Kamble b'dirab minei only exempts me, only tells me I don't have to pay a chiyav mamon that the Torah imposes upon me. Odom HaMazik, Choyvel b'chavero, something like that. That's called Milva HaKsuva b'Torah, a chiyav mamon that the Torah imposes. But a Milva Shenik Suva b'Torah, if I borrow money, that's a his chayvus midas. So that is not canceled. That type of a chiyav mamon is not canceled because of a Kamble b'dirab minei. So Rabbi Soloveitchik thought, that's what the Gemara means over here. When the Gemara in the first half in Sanhedrin distinguishes between gzelus v'chavolos as opposed to hados v'alvos means if you borrow money or you buy an automobile for $35,000, the meha mekach is the hischaivis midas. It's a different category. The halacha distinguishes between hischaivis midas and a milvah ksuva batar, chiyav mamon that the Torah imposes. And we find the Gemara distinguishes between the two. So the Gemara in other places distinguishes Milvak Suvabatar, Milvashenik Suvabatar. So that's one of the building blocks of the Halacha. So that's why he thought that's what it means over here. That's the difference between Gzelus V'chavolos and Hadoros V'halvos. Remember, when I was a student in the yeshiva, so the Bochen in the yeshiva was Reb Mendel Zaks. Reb Mendel Zaks was the son-in-law of the Chafetz Chaim. He married the Chafetz Chaim, was an old man, and his wife passed away, and he remarried. And he had a daughter from the second wife. Reb Mendel Zaks is married to the daughter from the second wife. So she, when they moved to Eretz Yisrael, I think Levi Eshkol was the prime minister. So they told Prime Minister Levi Eshkol, you ought to go visit the Chafetz Chaim's daughter, just moved to Eretz Yisrael. He said, it's impossible. Couldn't be. What is she, 105 years old? So he told him, no, the Chafetz Chaim had a daughter when he was 75 years old. Okay, so he went to meet her. That was a Mendel Zaks' wife. The Mendel Zaks was the bochen in the yeshiva. He's the one who, he gave smicha to Dr. Belkin. He used to give shiur and radin in the yeshiva. He's the one who gave smicha and radin. Now, when he came to America, he had no parnassus, so Dr. Belkin asked him he should come to the yeshiva. He was officially the bochen. He was the official sub also. Whenever a Rebbe was absent, whatever shiur the Rebbe, whatever mesichta the Rebbe was learning, he would just walk in and take over the shiur. Baba Kama, Ksubas, Yavamas, Gittin Kiddushin, Chulin, whatever, he was at home in any mesichta. I remember I heard a few, recently, I was just here in Yerushalayim 7 weeks ago, and then after that I went to a conference of Rabbanim in London, so I met a great grandson of Rav Mendel Zaks, who never knew his grandfather. So he wanted me, he was one of, there was a conference of 150 Rabbanim in Kiruv. So I participated in the conference. So he wanted to tell me all his stories. What did I hear from his great-grandfather? So I told him different stories and different things that he said in Shir at different times. So I remember when Rav Mendel Zaks was giving a p'china to the students in Rabbi Soloveitchik's class, and he asked them, what's the difference between Hegzelus v'Chavalus Hadas? So we all said over what Rabbi Soloveitchik said. See, he didn't like it. He didn't think that these two were connected. Rabbi Soloveitchik would always try to give you a definition. The Gemara has a term. What does the term refer to? So you have to define it based on building blocks that appear in the Gemara. The building blocks of halacha have to appear in the Gemara some way. Can't make up your own ideas. Like, what's the definition of kviyas rega hamavis? That's the last 50 years. That's a popular topic. How do you define when the person is dead, that you no longer you can pull a plug on him? What is he considered dead? So they give different rabbanim give different things. You can't give a definition based on concepts that the Tanoim were unaware of. You're giving a definition of death has to be something the Tanoim were aware of. So you look at Rav Moshe Feinstein's Tshuvas. He said the Tanoim were aware of a concept of Evesh Anashama Tluyabo. They talk about it. There are vital organs. They're not vital organs. Achman al time, person is in an accident. He loses his legs, he loses his arms. People lose their ear, lose their nose. But there are certain, you can live without it. People are blind. But there are certain organs that are considered vital organs. That's called Evesh Anashama Tluyabo. So the Tanoim have special dinim that only apply to Evesh Anashama Tluyabo or not. Then the Tanoim have halachas based on the Pasuk and Chumash that blood circulation keeps people alive. Somehow the world of medicine didn't know this till very recently. That blood circulation keeps the Pasuk and Chumash, Ki Adam Hu HaNefesh. And Tosfos said that's why if you cause bleeding on Shabbos, it's a Malachim Netilas Neshama, because the Pasuk says Ki Adam Hu HaNefesh. So Moshe Feinstein says all of this. He says, what's the definition of life and death? Has to do with whether the blood is circulating to the vital organs. Doesn't have to do with the breathing, doesn't have to do with all the other things. Everything, you can't tell me has to do with the brain stem. The Tanaim didn't know that there's a brain stem. What was the definition of life and death that the Tanaim worked with? Has to be something that has to do with vital organs. You want to say one is Yitzias Neshama, you have to say what is Evesh HaNeshama Tliyavo? And how do you keep the Neshama, how do you keep the Evarim alive? Through the bleeding, through the blood circulation. You have to work with, whenever you're discussing halacha, you have to work with concepts that appear in the Gemara. The building blocks of halacha have to appear in the Gemara. So that's the main thing in learning. A lot of times the Gemara has the same idea in two different places, in two different lashonis, but it's the exact same din. Take another example. There's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that when you have a din Torah and din imam, it's done by yom v'gomer balayla. The bezin has to convene in the daytime, but once they convene in the daytime, they can continue to have the din Torah even into the night, even into the wee hours of the morning. But the tchilas yeshiva's bezin has to be by yom. So there's a gemara in Bava Metzia, and there's a mishnah in Perek Hazav, chomesh prutas hay. There are five dinim that depend on a pruta. Dr. Belkin used to use that melitza often when he would speak in public. It's not worth 5 pennies. That was his lashon. Chamesh puta say, it's not worth 5 pennies. So one of the dinim that's mentioned over there by the Chamesh puta is that Bezdin will not make a yeshiva's Bezdin to discuss a din Torah if I have a tree against you for pachas mishava puta. Let's say you came to my candy store and I sell candies 5 for a penny and you took one candy, so you owe me 1/5 of a penny. And you got to pay me somehow. We don't have halfpennies. We don't have such small coins. You have to figure out how you're going to pay. But you agreed to pay for it. I didn't give it to you as a present. You have to pay me. So the Gemara says, but you can't have a din Torah. Bezdin doesn't make a din Torah. Bezdin doesn't start to have a din Torah. But if they started a din Torah, I say he bought $4 worth of chocolate and he never paid. That's the beginning of the Torah. Then I say, and one day he came in and he bought one candy that sold 5 for a penny. I wanted to pay for that 1/5 of a penny also. So the Gemara says, once his chilu, once they started a din Torah on a shavu pruta, then they can meet down even, you can give a psak on pachas ben shavu pruta, but you can't make a tchilas yeshiva's bezin. Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out, you see from the Gemaras that there's something common over here. There's a concept of kviyas yeshiva bezin. Kviyas yeshiva's bezin has to be by yom and not by laila. Tchilas yeshiva's bezin. Tchilas kviyas yeshiva's bezin has to be on a shavu pruta. But once you already had the tchilas yeshiva's bezin, then you can continue to nighttime. Each Gemara has its own terminology, but the both Gemaras have one premise that they share in common, that there is a concept of tchilas yeshiva's bezin. You have a lot of times like that. Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out there is a machlokas between the Gemara and the Zohar, min akotza el akotza, the Magen Avraham, is the standard commentary on the side of the page in the Shulchan Aruch HaRachaim. So there's a machlokas between the Gemara and the Zohar. When you give delicious food on Shabbos, on Shabbos there are 4 mitzvahs. There's Zoch B'Shamer and Kibbutz V'Yoinim. That's how the Rambam says. The 4 mitzvahs, 2 are in Chumash and 2 are in the Novi Yeshaya. Karasa the Shabbos Onik, L'Kadosh Hashem Mechubar, are the 2 Midiri Kabbalah that appear in Sefer Yeshaya. So what is Kibbutz, what is Onik? So the Vilna Goyen, Rav Soloveitchik, what's the definition? You gotta have a good definition. What's Kibbutz, what's Onik? So Rav Soloveitchik was fond of saying over the Bir Hagro gives you a definition. The Bir Hagro, the end of Hilchas Yontif. If you look in the Mishnah Berurah, it's the end of Chelakei when they talk about Simchas Yontif. So it gives you the definition. Kibud is all the hachanas that you do in advance of Yontif. And Oneg is the pleasure that you have when you vacuum the rug on Erev Shabbos and you set the table and you take a shower and you put up the cholent. That's all, and you light the candles. That's all kibud. Then on Shabbos, you enjoy the fact that the house is clean and you enjoy the delicious food and you enjoy the fact that you're dressed up nicely, L'Kovit Shabbos. So that's Onig. Onig is the pleasure that you have on Shabbos, and Kibbutz means the achanas that you do on Erev Shabbos. Hadlochas on Erev, the Rambam quotes it twice. You have to light the Neres on Erev Shabbos and then you enjoy the fact that the house is lit up. That's both Kibbutz and Onig. So the Gemara says, the Gemara in Gittin says that there's a mitzvah that, let's say there's a special delicacy that the family enjoys. Chopped liver, or gefilte fish, or something, or cholent, whatever. So should you serve it Leil Shabbos, or should you serve it Shabbos in the daytime? Which is preferable? Maybe serve it both times. But if you're going to serve it only one, people are going to get bored. You have the same thing twice. So what, if you have a special delicacy, should you serve it balayla or bayom? So the Gemara says, kvod yom odif mekvod layla. The Bavli says it's better to serve it in the daytime than to serve it at nighttime. And the Zohar says, Faket, that quod laila odif mikvodyam. So it's an outright contradiction. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, but you see, they have one thing in common, even though they're totally contradicting, even though they're totally in disagreement. They both are working on the assumption that there's a separate mitzvah, quod yom, and a separate mitzvah, quod laila. You don't say there's a din of onig the whole 24 hours of Shabbos. No. There's an onig balaila, and there's an onig bayom. And it's a question which one is more important. That's how he used to explain the din. How come the Gemara establishes a mitzvah, most assume it's a mitzvah, the Rabbanan, to eat Sholosh Sudas on Shabbos. So the Gemara seems to say, you have to have bread, you have to have pas. But Basudas Shlishis, Tosis comes up with a suggestion, maybe you don't need pas, maybe even Mine Tagima. If you have a piece of gefilte fish, a piece of herring, or a fruit, maybe something else is also good, maybe you don't need pas. Why should you distinguish between the third Suda and the first 2 Sudas? Rabbi Soloveitchik used to explain very beautifully that there's a din of onig bayom and a din of onig balayla, where they all like the Zohar, like the Gemara, but atzad shavu shabahem, they say there's not a din of onig 24 hours straight. There's a separate din onig bayom, separate din onig balayla. So you have to have a suda bayom and a suda balayla with pas to fulfill the din of onig. Then there's a din of shalosh suda zechalamon. As far as the Soda Suda is concerned, you could have had all three could have been Mina Tagima. The reason why you need Pas is not because of Soda Suda Mina, that's because of Onig Yom and Onig Lailo. And once you did Onig Yom, you already had one Suda that you had bread, so the Suda Shlishis can be Mina Tagima. He used to always give, Absolvechik had a Misnagdish, a joke that you can't say by Chsidim, that there was a Chassidish Rebbe, this is a nasty Misnagdish joke, Chassidish Rebbe was saying Shabbos Shudas Torah, and Parshas Lech Lecha. So he said, how come in the Chumash the Sefer Torah Lech Lecha is spelled with two big chesen? So there was a Misnagdish, and he says, I beg your pardon, it's spelled with two chaps, and it's regular letters, it's not bigger than the other letters. He said, that's one teretz, I have a better teretz. This is a Misnagdish joke. Rabbi Soloveitchik would always say, he would always get the students involved. He would always say, there's a machlokes in the Gemara, who do you think is right? Then the kid would explain why he said. The other guy would scream, no, he's not right. So he would make the machlokes, he made every machlokes alive. Machlokes. And he would say, make every machlokes alive. Then he would say, if it's something in the Zikin, you have to, the Shach walks in the door, and the Vilna Gaon walks in, and my grandfather Reb Chaim comes in the door. He would get everybody involved. So a lot of times he would ask the students a difficulty. So the student would give a whole convoluted answer, a whole complicated thing. So he said, it's obviously incorrect. The answer in science, there are different ways to explain things in science. So usually the easiest answer is always the correct one. The one that's convoluted is not correct. Remember I took Professor Soloveitchik, that was Shmuel Soloveitchik, was Rabbi Soloveitchik's younger brother. His youngest brother was Aaron Soloveitchik. He was much younger than Rabbi Soloveitchik. But Shmuel Soloveitchik, the chemist, was a little younger. He was, I think, 2 years younger than Rabbi Soloveitchik. So he taught that year, he taught chemistry for the non-science majors. So he said they really didn't disprove the theory that the sun goes around the earth. Even with all the spaceships that they have now, you can forever everything. You would have to write a very long, complicated formula to explain how come the spaceship, how come the airplanes work, everything works. It would be extremely complicated formula. The reason why we assume that the Earth goes around the sun, because the formula is much easier. So he said, in science, that's usually the klal. If you have two ways to explain a phenomenon, and one way is a very simple explanation, one way is very convoluted, so usually the easiest explanation is the correct one. So in halacha is also like that. If you have a very complicated, convoluted pshat, usually it's incorrect. And the best pshat is usually the most pashim pshat. It's a dover yodua that the Beis Halevi, that was the father of Chaim Soloveitchik, was a Rosh Yeshiva in Valoshin. He used to give shiurim in Valoshin. And then his son, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, developed a little bit based on the father, but a different style of learning. So the Beis Halevi once made a comment, what's the difference between me and my son? So he says, when people come to me, someone comes to me with a kasha, a very strong kasha, and I work hard, I come up with the teretz, so I'm very happy and he's very happy. He's very happy, he has the murderous kasha, and I'm very happy I came up with a good answer. And when they come to my son, Rav Chaim, with a murderous kasha, and he comes up with the teretz, he'll always reinterpret the Gemara in such a way that it'll come out that the kasha was based on a mistake. There never was a kasha. You misunderstood the Gemara. So he said, everybody walks away disappointed. The guy thought he had a good kasha. There was no kasha. And I didn't say a teretz. I just showed you the pashim pshat in the Gemara. There never was a kasha in the first place. That was always by Rabbi Soloveitchik. And we give a shiur on the most difficult Gemara. He had a knack of taking the most difficult Gemara and simplifying it. When you walked out of his shiur, everything was easy. And you would kick yourself. Why didn't I think of that? Mamish Pasha Pshat. It was always a Pasha Pshat. You couldn't say over his shiurim. One of my classmates used to go to Pirche on Shabbos afternoon, Pirche Aguda. So every Shabbos they would alternate. The boy learned in Chaim Olin, another boy learned in Tervidas, another boy learned in RJJ, the different yeshivas at that time. So every week another boy would say a shtickle Torah from his Rebbe. He'd say over a Gemara, a Kasha, and say over a Teretz. And this classmate of mine, he said, you can't say over anything from Abbasol Reitchik. You say over the Kasha, then it comes out. The Teretz is that you misunderstood the Gemara. So it comes out there was no Kasha in the first place. So what are you going to say? The false pshat in the Gemara. Rabbi Soloveitchik every year had Yahrzeit to his father on Gimel Shvat for many years. So he would give a major shia. People would fly in from out of town. That over 1,000 people a lot of times attending the shia. People would come from, drive in from Lakewood and fly in from Cleveland, from Chicago, from different places they came in. And it was a big thing every year that we'd greet each other when people would be walking in the street to come to the yeshiva. The Yahrzeit Rosh was always in the yeshiva. They would say, like, you say, Afeilich and Yontu, Afeilich and Yahrzeit. Have Afeilich and Yahrzeit. We'd see each other once a year. People, once a year we saw each other, like, Ali Ola Regal. We didn't see each other all year long. The shiur was 4 hours long. The first 2 hours was halacha, and the next 2 hours was a drasha, hashkofa, based on the topic of halacha. He would say, what's the hashkofa of the halacha? So he would give, he would start off only the Yahrzeit drasha. All year long he didn't say it like this. He had a technique. He would start off, he would say, over the Gemaras. Every year he picked a different topic. Usually Kiddush Abdallah benched Tzitzis Tefillin, something that the people would understand. And the people did understand. He explained it very well. He would always start off with the Gemara and start off with 3 or 4 kashas, murderous kashas. He would explain the kashas so well, then he would review all the 4 kashas, everybody got it straight. And you would think, no one can, Moshe Rabbeinu can't answer these questions. This is impossible. Then he would quote another Gemara. He gave out marmakams in advance. Everybody came and prepared. And then he would quote another Gemara and show that pshat is like this, and all the kashas fell away by itself. That was always the style of the Yahrzeit Shir. It's not that you have a kasha and come up with a new idea. He didn't come up with new ideas. He would just show everything says in the Gemara. You don't introduce new factors into the Gemara. You just interpret the words of the Gemara. There was a great Goyen, Rabitzola Ponovich, Rabitzchak Rabinovich. He was the top Rosh Hashiva in Ponovich. So he was a big Baal Pilpul. Rabitzola Petterburger was a big Baal Musa. He was one of the 3 most outstanding students of Rabbi Sol Salanter, Rabitzola Petterburger, Rabitzchak Blaser. And he was one of the big Bali Musa. He wrote a strong Sefer Shalach, was Pri Yitzchak, very strong in Halacha. So, and he was a big Bali Musa, but he couldn't control himself. So he, Rabbi Gifter used to say over, I'm distantly related to Rabbi Gifter, so he used to say, Rabbi Yitzchak of Petterburger, the big Bali Musa, made a comment on Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak of Ponevezher, that they put an advertisement in the newspaper that they're founding a new yeshiva in Ponevezh, and they want candidates to apply to give the shiur. So the Marshor applied in the Pnei Yeshua and Rabbi Yitzchak Ponevezher. So the Marshor, they said, he's not bad for Haskalah's Gemara. We'll have him teach the Mechina for the Shracha students. Pnei Yeshua, he already has a little spunk. We'll have him say the first shiur. Rabbi Yitzchak Ponevezher, woo! He says all Chidushim Nifloim. So they made him the Rosh Hashiva. That's how they used to joke. So he, a lot of times he said big chidushim, and then they realized it was against all the Gemaras. But Reb Chaim loved him very much. Reb Chaim thought he was out of this world. So they say, they have us printed. One occasion Reb Chaim was away, and Reb Yitzchak Ponevezher visited by him, and he stayed in his home. And then he went on his way. So Reb Chaim came back home, and they told him Reb Yitzchak was here. So he held the world of Reb Yitzchak. When they were looking for a rabbi for Yerushalayim, Reb Shmuel Salant was getting old, and he died in his 90s, I think. He was very old. He was the head of the Eidah Charedis, and they were looking for a successor. They wanted an assistant rabbi to take over. Reb Chaim recommended they should take Reb Yitzchak Ponevezher. He was the biggest Baal Mechanech. He said, they have enough rabbanim. The style used to be rabbanim from Europe would retire, and they would move to Eretz Yisrael, and they would join the Badats. They would join the Eidah Charedis. So they had enough Mara Aro, and knew how to pass. Reb Chaim thought that they need someone who knows how to say Chidush Torah. So he wanted Reb Yitzchak Ponevezher. It didn't turn out like that. They took the Aderis instead. And the Aderis, Rabbi Eliyahu David Rabinovich told me, took the Aderis. I think he came in 1902, then he died in 1906. And Reb Shmuel Salant went strong another couple of years. He never saw on his Matzeva, it says, Shenisman Aliyas Rabbi Yerushalayim. He was appointed to take over, but he never took over. He didn't live so long, because Reb Shmuel Salant outlived him. He had a home right across the street over here. The Aderis lived right across the street, facing the coastal of Maravi. So Reb Chaim came home, and he asked his son, oh, He asked Rav Elvela, was a bacher, he was single, he was home. He asked him, dude, did you talk and learn? Abditzel upon him, he said, did you talk and learn it? So he says, blah, he said, yeah, a little bit. So he says, he wasn't spoiled. He's so fantastic. He said, yeah. You can ask him, Astir, how come here it's red and here it's black? And he'll come up with an answer. But he said, every kasha like that. He's a genius. He knew how to say it. But he said, it wasn't muchruch in the Gemara. You have to say a teretz. That the teretz has to be based on the Gemara. It's not enough you have a contradiction. The style of the teretz, you have to have a hint in the Gemara that the teretz is true. Most of the Gdolim didn't have that. That's Rav Zavala insisted like that. And that's the Briska. They want everything should be either mefurish in the Gemara, kamat mefurish in the Gemara. That's the lashon of the Rav Rubel at Denneburger. I said that before. When you want to say a chiluk, it has to be either explicit in the Gemara or kamat mefurish in the Gemara. These are some of the aspects of the Briska style of learning. Now, the Briska style of learning is to learn the iyun, to explain. Now you have every child in elementary school. He reads that. It's a gavret, it's a chefta, it's a melos, it's kib. They know how to throw the words. He made a joke out of the whole thing. You can't just say gavre chefta. You have to prove that it's the din of gavre chefta. You can't just throw the words. There used to be students in Rabbi Soloveitchik's class. I remember one year when we were learning Yevamos. Rabbi Soloveitchik said he never learned this part of Yevamos before with Tosfos. He wasn't familiar. He was giving shiur. So the students kept on interrupting in the middle of the shiur. They said, why don't you say it like this? They said, will you stop bothering? They were trying to push. You can't push all the Gemaras into a straitjacket. You can't force everything into the mold of a gavra chefza malos. Every Gemara, you have to have the terminology that applies. You have to get the concepts from the sugya. What fits in? You can't force foreign concepts on a sugya. These concepts have to flow from the sugya. This is all now is a lot of pseudo brisk. It's not at all brisk. It's imitation brisk. Good. There's a lot more to discuss, but this is a haskalah. Okay.